me again, Phil Parr. If I'd get up close to the microphone, you could probably hear me, couldn't you? Coming into your houses, wherever you happen to be, and it's good to be with you. And our guest today is a lady that Dale Campbell first talked with and said, well, you need to talk to Phil Parr. So this lady and I visited a couple weeks ago, and she paid me a wonderful compliment. She said, I feel like I found a kindred spirit, and you have. Karen Karsh, welcome to Blind Like Me.
Thank you very much. I'm thrilled, actually.
Are you?
You bet.
Well, that's good. I haven't had a guest that was thrilled in a long time.
Well, it's nice to talk to people who are similar, you know, and other musicians, and
yeah.
I'm just tickled.
Yeah, that's what I like about For the People. We're all going through this blindness thing, you know, and anything we can do to help each other is a plus.
Absolutely.
All right. Karen is a singer, piano player, and a professional singer, and you said you'd been singing professionally since you were how old?
Well, I've been singing professionally since I was 15, and I've been writing music since about that time, too, although I don't really think I came into my own until I was in my 20s in terms of writing. But that means I was singing before I was talking. You know what I mean?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So I think in order to write, you have to live some of life, so you don't have to write things to write about.
Oh, that's the truth.
I think, who is it, Mac Davis said, he, you know, too much gin and not enough vermouth. I think he was right.
That's great.
But I loved it. I tell you what, let's just start off by playing a song of yours and tell us, you wrote this song, obviously.
I did, and I'll tell you why. You know, the piece of this, you know, for the sighted public was because wherever I went, you know, somebody had something to say about what it was like to be blind. You all know how that is.
Sure.
And then, on, you know, the other hand, I don't think people who can see really truly understand the aspects of blindness that we do. And that's okay because, you know, they're not living it. But I get really concerned when blindness becomes a priority and how we really live and the positive things that we do find in our lives seem secondary. And I'm talking about the sighted public seeing us this way. So I wrote this song called If You Could See the Way I See It, and it's turned out to be sort of a Karen Karsh signature tune, and I really do hope you love it. This is the long version. We also have an edited version, but you may as well hear the whole thing.
Let's do the long version. Ready?
You bet.
All right.
I can't see colors glimmering, bright shining sunsets are not shimmering, but I hear music. I can hear it singing of birds, they are my morning light. The whisper of crickets, they're the stars that split my nights. And children's laughter, that's the sweetest sound. Listen with kind of you I really do believe. We can live in harmony, but we gotta start right now to realize we all have a part to play. You see it your way, and I see it mine. I know it's gonna take some time, but we gotta start right now to finally, finally find a way to
fantastic, isn't it?
Thank you so much.
So, you know, I want to say, you sound like everybody.
Well, is that good or bad?
That's good.
Sure.
You sound like all the, you know, I was going to say you sound a little like Linda Ronstadt, but then you sound like Ella Fitzgerald, and then you sound like Carole King, and then you sound like, you know, it's wonderful. You have lots of talent.
That's
nice.
Thank you very much. I worked hard in this business.
That is you playing piano?
Oh, yeah.
I'll be...
And what's fascinating about that, Phil, is that I, you know, even as long as I've been in this business, I'm pretty much self-taught as a pianist. I had plenty of chance to study and take lessons, and, you know, what I would practice singing, I would never do on the piano, if you know what I mean. I was just not together about it. So now, you know, when I'm working and playing with the guys, that didn't sound right. When I'm working with the band, you know, they're these hot jazz cats that just play their bods off. And, you know, I go into the studio and I worry to death about every little note I'm going to hit. So the guy that I worked with is really a genius, and his name is Park Peters. He also happens to be blind. We had such a blast.
imagine.
Yeah. And what he did was he put blankets over the piano, and he really isolated it as much as he could. And then instead of me having to do a track first, like you normally do nowadays, he just said, play, sing. And so that's what I did, and it really helped me. Now, there are other times I can work to a click. If the audience doesn't know what that is, it's a sort of a metronome.
Yeah.
And I can play, you know, and be okay with it. But sometimes with a tune, like If You Could See, you just have to sing. You know, you just have to be able to do that.
He wanted you to be as natural as
exactly.
as it could be. So he, what he was trying to do was isolate the piano from the vocal mic.
Right. So that if something needed to be, you know, edited in or punched, as we say,
yeah.
Then, you know, we could do that. But it was really... because I was very concerned about having an album this time that just sounded like me, and it was almost like me sitting in the living room singing to my audience. And that's what we got.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah.
But he was attempting to isolate the piano and keep it out of the vocal mic so that if he had to come back and redo the vocal, he'd have the piano track.
Exactly. Normally, and we actually had to do that in a couple places, so it worked out beautifully.
Normally, he would lay the piano track and then put you in an isolation booth, but he said, just do it.
Just do it.
Let's
so I sat, you know, with headphones and
sure.
and sang my lungs out.
Well, it came out wonderfully. I love it.
Yeah, thank you
it's,
very much.
It's very, very nice. But, you know, it's almost it could almost be a love song. It wouldn't have to be about, it's kind of about blindness, yes, but it could almost be a love song.
And it's really about the world and the part we yeah. all have to play, and we have to actually, you know, get in there and do something and see the world in a positive way. So if we have to make changes, we can do that.
Well, of course, you're out in the public a lot. A lot of people go to the same job every day, and they don't. You meet new people every week, all the time. You're meeting new people. So you're having new people reacting to your blindness all the
right.
time. They're saying, oh, I don't see how she does that. She's totally blind. Well, you know, don't give me that crap.
I know, and either they think you're super blind, you know, or as weak as a banana peel.
Yep.
It's just bizarre. It's the strangest phenomenon I've ever experienced, really.
The sighted people don't know so little about or have such a weird concept about what it would be like to be blind. Of course, you can't blame them because, you know, my heavens.
Well, they don't live it.
Being blind to them would be you know, a lot of them a death sentence. You know, they couldn't understand. All right, let's talk about you as a child. You were born and raised where? Where was you?
I was born and raised in Denver, Colorado, and I still live about 18 miles outside of Denver in a suburb. And I went to public schools. I'm what we call an RLF baby,
uh-huh.
and so I was born given too much oxygen. You know, that whole experience happened to many, many, many of us.
I've interviewed lots of folks who had the same problem, same
yeah.
thing happened to them.
So I went to public schools, and we were sort of mainstreamed in the early 50s, you know, the late 50s, I should say. We would go, all the blind kids were bused to one central school. We had lots of resource time together, you know, learn Braille, et cetera. And then we were put in regular classrooms for a certain portion of the day. But
uh-huh.
thank God, by the time I got to high school, we were all actually sent to our own high schools. And that truly is where I began to really, really thrive. That was an amazing experience for me.
Yeah, later on they decided it would be easier to make the teacher go to different schools than it would
right.
make the kids all go to one school, which is,
right.
which is, you know, why someone didn't come up with that earlier, I have no idea.
Well, who knows?
But then you got to go to the high school in your neighborhood,
yes.
the high school that you're, do you have siblings?
I have an older brother.
But you went to the same high school he went to,
yes.
he had graduated from or whatever.
Yeah.
And so the neighborhood kids were around you. And when did your interest in music first begin to manifest itself?
I sang before I talked. That's a joke in our family, you know. And I listened to the radio every day. I was the snotty little kid that called Dick Clark, for God's sake, from Denver to Philadelphia. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
I mean, I was into it. And I listened to everything that you could probably, you know, possibly listen to. And my mom was very supportive in that angle. And she would play classical music and, you know, sometimes jazz. And I loved all the old Sinatra movies. And, you know, but I don't know, it was bigger than I was even then, it wasn't even a choice, Phil. It was just who, well, you have to understand that. It's just who
sure
I was,
did.
You know. So I just always sang, always, always. And, you know, I was the kid that, you know, had the solo at the Christmas play, you know, when I was 5 or 6. And I was the only Jewish kid, actually, that had that solo. And they made me sing about the dreidel, but that was all right.
But that that talent had opened many doors as a child for you that
wouldn't have
been opened.
Right.
It's awful to say that, but many blind kids who go to public school feel isolated because they don't fit in. Whereas you had this musical talent, and folks tend to flock to people who they don't realize there ain't no money in it, and it'll lead you to an early grave.
For sure.
Nobody's told them that. They think you're kind of special because you're a musician. You can play and sing. So,
yeah, they don't know about the dry spells and the no work and, you know.
Well, they don't know how frustrating it can be when you're sitting in a large room full of people and you sing a song and you think, man, I sang the hell out of that. And when you finish, there's just silence.
Exactly.
You know, everybody's eating, finishing up their chicken dish, and they don't really care what you... You know, so I always tell them, please hold your applause until after the songs, if you don't mind, because you're really screwing me up when you clap during the tunes.
You are hilarious.
That people don't realize the frustration of being a musician.
And the loneliness and the, you know, isolation, and that's why I said, you know, meeting a kindred spirit is like a, I don't know, manna from heaven or something. But I was going to tell you something about this, you know, sort of getting to meet all the people, et cetera, that you were discussing. What it really did for me, though, was it humbled me deeply because kids can be very cruel.
Ooh, hey,
even my blind peers could be extraordinarily cruel about, you know, who I was or my you know, different religion or any of those issues that really should not have played a part. So it really taught me to have just an amazing sense of compassion for everybody else. And I think it, you know, it opened up the world to me in terms of what I might want to do later, you know, with kids myself. And it taught me never, never, never to use it as a power tool.
Yeah.
So it was a worthwhile lesson. Painful, oh my God, but, you know, very worthwhile, I think.
Or many, many lessons worth learning are painful in this life, as we all
most of them
have realized. Listen, let's play another song from your CD and take
you
a
want
little.
To?
And then sure, and then take a break and
right,
come back and.
Let's do this song called "Say I Love You," which is I think number 3. Actually.
You think
Let
it's
me
number
tell
three?
You a little bit about it.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I've lost both my mom and dad in the past few years.
Oh.
And after my mama had passed away, and, you know, blind kids sort of have a symbiotic, very intense, tight relationship with their parents, as a rule, can be bad or good. But so after my mom passed away, we were with my dad a lot. And, you know, he was sick, and he had heart disease, and he had a lot of issues. And I just remember thinking to myself, he has to know every second, you know, how it is, because someday he won't be there and I won't get to tell him anymore. And so I wrote this song, which is called "Say I Love You."
All right. I hope this is the right one. And you tell me, let me push the button and let's, you can hear it is that it? All right. Let's play that and we'll take a short break. Karen Karsh.
Times I've had this feeling and then let it slip away. Too many excuses, too many reasons, didn't say what I wanted to say. Too many times I was afraid you wouldn't feel the way I do. Before it's too late or you turn away, gotta find the courage to say I It's a matter of fact, as simple as that. I love you. Too many times we think tomorrow there will be plenty of time to tell the ones we love that we love them, and the song runs out of rhyme. Life can change in the beat of a heart, something no one can deny. Before it's too late, before the moment passes by.
In Northeast Pennsylvania.
Good morning again. I'm Bob Bartlett.
That was November 2004. Hi, this is Phil Parr, and this November 2006, we're going to do it again. We're going to gather at the Sheraton Northeast in Houston, Texas, and have a big party. Opening ceremony Saturday morning. Cooking in the Dark with Dale Campbell and Cheryl coming Saturday afternoon. Saturday night, lots of dancing and great live music. We'll record a live blind handyman show Sunday morning. A live blind like me show Sunday afternoon. And Sunday night, more dancing and great live music. If all this sounds like fun to you, why don't you email me and I'll send you the details. My email address is phil@philparr.net. That's P-H-I-L at P-H-I-L-P-A-R-R.net. We'll see you this November in Houston.
Karen Carr.
harsh. I need to work out something where I can talk to people while their songs are playing, don't I? I was afraid to do anything because I had everything playing and I didn't want to move. It was, you know, just listening with my headphones on.
Yeah.
He put very little with you, just some drums and maybe some strings in the background.
There you go.
But other than that, it's you.
Yeah.
Just Karen Karsh. Yeah. That's lovely. I love that. And that's you know, it's you're right. It's so difficult. Some if you love somebody, tell them so.
That's right.
Don't hold back, because they may not be here.
That's right. Tomorrow could be, you know.
Yeah.
Your life can change in the beat of a heart.
All right. Let's talk about you. How do I put this? You graduated high school. Did you go to college?
I did.
You did? Did you get a degree?
I did. I went to CU, which is the University of Colorado, for
uh-huh.
3 years, and then went back to work in the clubs. Which just thrilled my parents, I'll tell you.
Where else
finally,
is there to play?
Graduated with a degree in music as a profession from the University Without Walls program, which is part of Regis College now.
Which is an online
university.
Online university?
Yeah. No, it's not online. In those days, nothing was online, you know?
In the 70s, yeah.
But now I think people can do lots of online work. But then it was all experiential learning, and you could only do it if you had a certain number of traditional credit hours, which I had.
Okay.
But, you know, the thing that's interesting that we didn't discuss yet was when I was 15,
uh-huh.
I met a record distributor in Colorado, and he found a way for me to audition for probably the top label of its time, which was ABC Dunhill. Talk about scared freaking to death.
I imagine. But I didn't know.
I recorded with them when I was 15 with a producer named Steve Barry, who was very famous. Never called me. I must have called that poor man. He probably still hears my voice in his freaking dreams, you know, in his nightmares or something. But it's great when you're a kid and, you know, nothing concerns you except your focus.
Yeah.
So, I recorded for them. We did a Carole King tune called I Was Not Born to Follow, which it sold some, not much, but it was my first chance to do some national television, and you know, I went to Cleveland and did the Upbeat show and Windsor, Canada, and did another show called the Robin Seymour Show. So it was quite an experience, and you know, as it would be, things didn't work out the way you dream. And by the time I got to college, you know, they had dropped my contract. So but I, you know, then got to continue and get more experience, and you know, I didn't give up. I wanted to. You know, I really was so brokenhearted. But if you're a singer, as you know, Phil, you don't give up usually because it's in your soul and you can't.
Well, I didn't know at what time in your life that happened.
Yeah.
So you were 15, and someone heard you, and they got you with this guy with ABC Dunhill.
ABC Dunhill.
And
who had the Mamas and Papas, who were my idols, you know.
And you auditioned for them, and they said, hey, golly, this girl's got talent. Let's record her.
Right.
And so they did.
Yeah.
And they put your song out on a little 45 record.
That's right.
And they sent it to radio stations, and some played it, and some didn't. And you sold a few, and you had a record out at 15 and a contract. And life looked, at that point in time, like you were unstoppable.
Right.
Dream on. You were going to be a big star, going to be on American Bandstand, going to be on television, going to do movies. You were going to be it.
Yep.
And then 2-3 years later, you realized, well, maybe not.
Yeah. Crash.
Had to be terrifically hard on a sighted child, blind child, period.
Exactly.
Young person.
Yeah.
Had to be, because you had it all, you had life all planned. I guess your parents did also.
Well, they did, but they were very careful to make sure that I was aware that it was a very tough business.
Yeah.
And my parents would never move to California or any of that. You know, if it happened, it happened. If it didn't, it didn't. And, you know, looking back, I really thank them for that, because I've had a normal life, as normal as a blind person can have, you know.
Well, yeah.
So
But by the time you got to college, you realized the dream was not going to happen.
Exactly.
And your parents may have fussed at you for playing in clubs, but where else is there to play?
they really understood. What my dad and mom really wanted was for me to finish college, and I did that.
And you did that. So you did that, and they were both allowed to see that.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah.
But when they recorded you, they took you to California and recorded you, or they came there?
No, I went to L.A., recorded at Western Sound, which was the studio before the record plant, you know?
Yeah.
And recorded with a man who is a freaking, I mean, this guy is a legend in the music industry. His name is Hal Blaine, who is a drummer and played for everybody on the planet, Streisand, Sinatra, the Beach Boys, Jan and Dean, the Mamas and Papas, the Carpenters, Perry Como, Steely Dan. I mean, you name it, and Hal has really done it. Mason Williams, Joel Osborne played bass, and it was the most amazing experience of my life. And Hal and I are still friends.
But they had a big band. They had bass and drums and guitars. Do you have horns, or were they? I guess
they added horns and strings later. They added strings. I don't think there were any horns in that tune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they recorded you just to one side, or surely not?
They did two sides. And that was it.
And this took a couple of days, or you did them both in one day? Or?
We did I think it was 2 days that we were in there recording.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, you didn't do a lot of session time in those days. You went in, they took a day to do all the tracks, which means all the instrumental things were done first, and then I had 2 days to do vocals.
To do your vocal.
Uh-huh.
The band laid what they were going to do, and then you came in and sang.
That's exactly right.
So we had multi-track by then, I guess.
I think they were doing 8-track by then.
Yeah. What an experience! And you were 15.
Uh huh. I was.
Man, I can't be there. I can't imagine at 15.
Well, I really understood that era of music. You know, the Mamas and Papas, and I was really inside it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And my mom and dad both went with me, and. Well, I don't know what my brother was doing. He's, you know, I was 15. He was already in college by then, so I'm sure he was okay alone.
Okay.
But then I went off to college and got my first guide dog and, you know, all of those things.
And started living.
When I was 23.
Now, just one more quick thing about this time of being 50. Did you have an agent, a manager, someone?
Not at that point.
Really?
Well, the business was pretty open back then. They were looking for talent. So it was a very different world than it is now.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But you did all this. They put out your record. It didn't sell. They dropped your contract, and you realized then, I've got to pick up the pieces. And after crying for days and feeling sorry for yourself, you've got to go on. Life goes on. So you went to college and played in clubs, sang wherever they let you.
Absolutely. Had a band, you know.
Did you?
Yeah.
Had a band of your own, and did you book them?
I did some, but then we had, you know, a couple of different agents working for us at that point because it's too hard to do everything.
Oh, it's impossible to do everything. Yeah. So you went to college, got yourself a degree, and played around the Denver area.
Yeah.
And at 23, you married.
I got married 8 days before I turned 24.
Is that right?
Yes.
And had to have children?
I have a son who is 20. God bless him.
And what, is he musically inclined at all?
Not even.
Nothing.
Can't carry a tune, and he's this hockey playing, studying to be a paramedic firefighter kind of kid.
Oh.
And you know, the joke is he's the only jock I'll ever know, and so I've really learned to love all the things that he's involved with. So,
yeah. So, but no interest in music at all?
No, not really. He loves to listen, and, you know, sometimes he comes to the gigs and helps the sound engineer do some things, but in terms of his own musicality, he really is not his fascination.
Now, was there a point in time in your life you said you thought about giving up? Was there a point in your life when you said, I'm going to quit?
I'll tell you the truth, Phil, because it's been a long, hard road.
Oh, it has.
When I had Mark, which was in 1986, we had just recorded another album, which was really going to, we really felt it was going to go national. And then I found out I was pregnant. And I just really went through a long, hard, soul-searching, excruciating time in my life. What am I going to do, and how am I going to do it? And I'm one of these people that thinks I should be able to figure out a way to do it all, you know?
Yeah.
And I decided that I had to stay home and take care of Mark. I could not be on the road 95% of the time. You know, he didn't ask to be born. I had a responsibility to that child.
Yes, you did.
And so, in fact, that's exactly what I did. And I also was working as, because I couldn't give up the music business. I just, it makes me not feel good inside when I can't, you know, practice my craft.
Yeah.
So I started working, when I first got married, I started working my straight job, as we call it, as an artist in the schools, and I would travel around to different schools in Colorado mostly, but some across the country, teaching kids about writing music and doing a whole aspect of the program about what it was like to be blind and trying to give kids their own voice so that they would also be okay with who they were. And it was quite an unusual program, one that I don't think anybody else in the country has really done. And so I was doing that while Mark was growing up. And then I was also a TV reporter while Mark was growing up. I know you're thinking, huh? Really? But it's true. We did some pieces for the ABC affiliate in Colorado called Unsung Heroes, which I developed, and they aired on the weekends about people who never were recognized for the wonderful things they did. And we did them for 3 years, and I won a big award from Gannett Broadcasting for Innovation of the Year. You know, somebody asked me, another person said to me, well, I don't understand how you got to do that. Well, how I got to do it was I worked very hard, went to the people at Channel 9, you know, had a proposal, had it all laid out. And believe me, they said a blind person couldn't do that. And I...
Wait a minute. Tell the story. When you went in, the guy that you talked to said, a blind person can't do this. And
right.
You said, I want to do it.
I was just very quiet about it. And I said, that's fine, but I want to do it. You know, I sort of overlooked what he said. I just didn't buy into it at all. I didn't get up in arms, and believe me, I can get up in arms about certain things. You know?
Didn't say you didn't say you know what a racist pig you are,
exactly.
Discriminating against blind people. You just said, yeah, but I want to do it.
Right.
He said, I don't think a blind person can do this. And your remark was, I love it. I want to do it.
Right.
And you did it.
And I did it. And so that lasted for about 3 years. Now, this was when, you know, Mark was 4 or 5 by then.
Uh-huh.
And
I don't want to walk away from this job that you had.
With the kiddos?
Yeah, with the kid where you traveled around. Now, did you talk to blind children or sighted children? Or who did you?
I would talk to anybody who would, you know, let me do that. But mostly it was sighted kids.
Uh-huh.
I was mostly concerned with, you know, any kids in any public setting, you know, sometimes there were private schools involved, but mostly it was the public school setting.
Uh-huh.
And if there happened to be blind children mainstreamed at the same time, they were part of the program, too.
And someone paid you to do this?
Well, the Arts Council of Colorado was involved, and then the schools would pay me through their parent-teacher organizations. But it was just like every other aspect of music. I was always on the phone, always trying to get work. It was a major.
I was going to say it would be, because if you were... This is like booking gigs.
It was booking gigs.
I mean,
it
was.
Right.
You got to stay on the phone all the time, and you got to tell them your story and sell them.
Yep. And
which,
thank goodness, you know, my reputation sort of followed me. And I didn't, you know, I was lucky to get jobs. But it was an interesting task, you know, for all those years. And my dogs were always the stars, you know.
So if you could find somebody who'd pay you, then you'd come, but you had to have a driver.
Right.
And a car, and you would go, and they'd had to have a piano, I suppose. And,
yes, because later on we would bring in a keyboard if we had to, but mostly I wanted an acoustic piano.
And you would play their piano, and you would tell them about writing music, about how to, of course, a lot of the time, I guess you were talking to music students.
Mostly I was talking to every student.
Yeah.
The whole concept of the program was to bring the school together in a more united group.
Okay.
We would do big community concerts of the work that the children had created at the end of the month, and they would get to be involved with a professional concert situation. We would take them either into another venue or to their feeder high school, which meant the high school that they would all go to, as long as the high school had a professional auditorium and, you know, somebody to run the lights and that sort of thing. And I would bring in a sound engineer. And, I mean, we really did it. So
you did, didn't you? That's it. Well, you haven't let blind to slow you down too much, have you? You haven't sat in the corner and felt sorry for yourself.
No, it's been harder, I must say, since work has been so slow. Because, you know, the Artists in the Schools program has pretty much ended because there is no money for that sort of thing right now.
Not anymore.
Don't realize this music grounds kids and rounds them out and, you know, teaches them to be who they are. But
and then you had a young child to take care of, to work with. But you never quit, to answer the question. You never gave up. I tell you, we're fast running short of time. Let's try to play one or two more songs. What is next on the CD? I just stopped it. So what would be next?
The next tune is a tune called After the Rain, and it's my Eat Your Heart Out Jim Brickman tune. Jim Brickman is sort of this new age guy, and he plays piano really nicely.
Yeah.
And he writes these sort of beautiful, simple little tunes, you know, and I thought, I got to try this. So so I wrote After the Rain.
After the Rain, and this is Karen Karsh from close to Denver, Colorado. We'll take a break right after this. Be right back.
Team certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Science, here's Tim Cummings.
Many of you have probably heard of J&R Music, which has many stores, I think, all over the place, and they sell consumer audio and video equipment, but they do have a very nice website as well. It's www.jnr, that's jandr.com. The website is very accessible. You can do search. They specialize in Sony products, but they sell other products as well. And if you're looking for mini disc recorders or camcorders or any kind of consumer electronics, you'll find it at jnr.com. I would give their website a screen reader friendliness rating of a 9, and check them out. www.jnr.com. For Blind Sights, this is Tim Cummings saying, keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sights.
We're back with Karen Karsh. Two things. Man, I couldn't resist putting some sound effects. I heard that at first, and I thought, what was that?
Yeah, what the hell was going on?
What the
on
little
there?
Thunder there? Little, and also, you were, the song we heard before that, there was harmony. You sang your harmony, own harmony.
Yes.
And very nicely.
Thank you.
I feel like I've moved to New York and gone to work for WABC.
Hey.
And you, now that it's all done, Not that you're going to quit or not that, but you know so much more now than you knew when you were a college kid and playing clubs, and even when you did the album in '86 and your child was born, you understand life and the music business so much better.
I do.
And you're probably like me. You probably don't give a damn whether they call you or not.
I do.
Oh, you do? Okay, I do too.
Now the truth comes out, Phil. Now the truth comes out.
Well,
no, I would like to, I'm sort of ready for a new phase since Mark is out kind of on his own now, you know, going to college.
Yeah.
And my husband's career is doing pretty well. And I don't know if I should tell this because I hate to tell things that haven't happened and I'm very superstitious about it, but we are pitching the Oprah show because, you know what, I want my chance. And I really believe there are women all across the country, men too, maybe even you could, you know, think about blind people who are having to start over and do something new. And I want a second chance. I've never quit singing. I have never given up. I found ways to work and thrive, you know, and to make sure I took care of my son. And you know what? I'm ready for something. I don't think I'm going to want to ever be on the road 100% of the time like some of the country artists we hear about.
Yeah.
And I'm old enough to know that I won't be controlled, but I would also very much like to, you know, up the levee, you know, ante a little bit and really, really start pushing and seeing what we could come up with.
Yeah, I guess I'd be a liar if I said anything else, you know, that I keep thinking, well, gee, an old blind man, I might develop a little cult following in Texas. Wouldn't that be kind of cool? I write songs, and I wouldn't mind going to Dallas every, you know, but that's not going to happen.
Marvelous.
I'm not trying to make it happen. I'm not doing anything to make
right.
it happen because I don't want to fight. I don't want any more disappointments in my life, and I've got things where if I have one, it'll be an accident. I'm not going to cause one.
Right, and I understand that, and you know the rejection factor in this business is so horrendous that, you know, sometimes I just want to hide my head somewhere, and but there's this part of me that says, you know, maybe I could make some people happy, And, you know, I don't know. It just, I'm very comfortable with television. And, you know, I just want to sing, you know, so.
Well, then you're pitching the Oprah show.
Well, we're going to try. They don't tell you this, but I don't believe they accept anything unsolicited in terms of music or anything like that because, you know, copyright infringement laws can be very dangerous. So we, there is somebody in that works in that office, and we have sent the stuff to that person, and hopefully they will get it in the hands of a producer.
I guess I'd just put me on the list of people you'll call when that happens.
Because
I want to know.
I'll be telling everybody, you know. When we did CBS This Morning with all those kids from Martin Park, I got to do that, too.
When was this? When was this?
This was in 96, and I'd written a song called If We Could See Through Each Other's Eyes, and the kids all came. We had to air at 5:00 Denver time in the morning.
What kids all came? What kids all came?
Well, all the children from this elementary school called Martin Park Elementary out of Boulder, Colorado.
Okay.
And 90 of them came and sang with me, and because Harry Smith was in town trying to promote the CBS early show at that point.
Okay.
And they were sort of, showing Denver talent, and I was fortunate enough to get to do that, and I was in heaven. I didn't want the day to ever end, you know?
Yeah.
So
it was 5:00 in the morning in Denver, frozen cold.
Yeah, I didn't care.
And they had you, if this was, they came to, brought the film crew to the school.
No. We all went to Betcher Hall, which is a very big symphony hall here in Denver.
Okay.
And all the kids had to be bussed down. So they all came, and I met them there, and it was quite an experience.
And you played the piano and sang?
I just sang, actually.
You just sang?
There were tracks. You know, how do we explain tracks? There were pre-recorded instrumental, the instrumental music was already recorded,
yeah.
And I just sang with the kids.
Did they interview you?
Yes.
They did?
Yes.
I guess you have a copy of that somewhere.
About a million of them.
I would think you would. And this was in 96.
96.
And that you had written the song that the kids sang.
Yes.
Man, that's, you know. But then 3 days after that, you come to the realization that and 50 cents at that time would buy you a cup of coffee at the drugstore.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
That's the problem. I mean, you have to really have a plan. You have to be, you know, ready to move. You have to have an agent in line, I'm thinking. And, you know, things that I've just learned since then. I don't know how these young kids in the industry handle it because they don't have all these experiences that you and I have lived through and, you know, are here to tell the story about.
Well, we want to be, you and I want to be Elvis Presley. We want it to go on all the time. We want to have, we want to be stars all the time. Not just, I opened for Ray Price.
Did you?
Oh, several times, yeah. And I opened for Ray Price and Tyler, and I got a standing ovation, and that was wonderful. But riding home, I stopped at the liquor store, and nobody knew me.
I know.
You know?
Yeah. And, you know, my thought was, after it was all over, I came home and, you know, had to do the dishes. You know what I mean?
Had to load the dishwasher.
Yeah,
exactly. And that's the way it is. So there's just, you know, having this musical talent is wonderful. But it ain't what it's cracked up to be.
No, unfortunately, it's not. It's not. But right now, you know, what I'm doing in Colorado here is today I'm going to go sing for the Denver Health Organization. They're doing a ribbon cutting. They're opening a new Mothers and Babies Hospital. And I have donated one of my songs to them that they will use for their video project about that, you know, Mothers and Babies Pavilion.
Okay.
So I'm going to sing that song today for them.
Now, is this a gig where you'll be featured or you'll be background music? Because
no,
there's a
I
big difference,
featured.
As you know.
I hate those background gigs, man, where you go in and you're, you know, your cocktail music and, whoa, that is just not my favorite thing to do. We've all done it. It's sort of like doing commercial jingles. We've all done those. You know, you do anything kind of to put the food on the table, but I don't, that's not my first love. My first love is when people actually listen and your music means something and you know, it's something they take with them forever. That's my prayer.
Which will be the way today is.
Yeah.
Today will be a good day. All right, Karen, we're completely out of time.
Oh.
I want to start one more song. And what is next on the CD? What would you like to play?
What I'd like you to hear is something that I didn't play. And, you know, there are tunes. There's a tune with the band. But here's something that my piano player played called Young at Heart. I think it's number 10. And, Phil, thank you so much. I have so enjoyed this, and I hope you and I can stay in touch. And
we will.
Yeah.
Let me move forward here, and let's find this song. Let me start. This is live radio, folks. That's not it.
That's not it. That's Ordinary Miracles. That's number 6.
Tell me when I hit it. No?
Nope.
All right, let's go over it. This is absolutely live radio. Is this
one
it? One more. All right, Karen.
No, one more.
One more, and then I'm going to... So this is it here, right?
Oh, for God's sake.
That's
now
not
you
it?
You have to back up, too. It was my mistake. You'd think I couldn't see the label on the freaking CD.
How about this?
Well, that's a tune I wrote called One Breath We Breathe.
No, we want to find the one
Young
you want.
Young at Heart is the one right after that.
Like this one
there
right here.
There you go.
Karen, you've been delightful. Thank you.
Phil, you have, too. Thank you so much.
I'll be in touch, and... I'm going to come see you someday.
I would love to. I'll come see you someday.
I wish you would. I wish you'd come to Houston. Just hang on just a minute till this
All
is
right.
over, okay? Let's play this final song by Karen Karsh from Denver, Colorado.
Fairy tales can come true. It can happen to you if you're young at heart. It's hard, you will find, to be narrow-minded when you're young at heart. You can go to extremes with impossible schemes, you can't.